Okay, my name is Stephen Whittle. I'm the Vice President for an organisation called Press for Change. And we have been lobbying in the UK for 10 years, well, 13 years, and our work has led to Employment Protection and the Gender Recognition Act in the UK, which allows people to have their legal recognition for all purposes. But I also work with the Transgender European Council, and we're looking forward to developing a more international perspective. I want specifically to talk about transphobia and what we know, because I think it's very important that we frame transphobia in the language of the courts.
Can you move your microphone closer to your mouth?
Sorry. I think it's very important that we frame transphobia in the language in a language that the courts understand in terms of specific sorts and forms of discrimination. If we try to think about what are the very basic things that people need in life in order to be able to function and to develop and to take part in society, there are some core issues. Mostly, people need initially to have personal safety in public and in private. It's quite astonishing that when we do any surveys of people as to violence they've experienced, 1 in 10 people will have experienced violence to the extent that it is a criminal offence when they transition in the workplace. Over 90% of trans people who responded to the Washington Needs Survey in 1999 reported having been victims of violence, of which over 70% reported having been victims of violence in their family home. So I think it's really important to recognise that actually trans people suffer tremendously from very high levels of violence from starting as children, being different, being forced to wear different things, being forced to wear and behave in different ways, through to the point where they're actually even, they've got a job, and they do that job well, but then saying that they are going to transition, at least 28%, that's nearly 3 in 10, will actually suffer daily discrimination in that workplace, and 1 in 10 of them will be assaulted to the extent that it is a criminal offence. I think it's absolutely crucial that if we want to move towards challenging transphobia, we need to think very carefully about what it is that enables trans people to become ordinary members of our society. Crucial to that is obtaining equal access and protection in employment and the workplace. No amount of providing legal recognition or allowing people to get married or to change their birth certificate is going to help if people are not able to keep their jobs. We work under some sort of illusion that people have gender reassignment and cannot be seen. Well, the vast majority of trans people will be recognisable for being trans at some point in their lives. And consequently, even technically affording full protection elsewhere will not afford them protection in the workplace unless we ensure that we go out to the courts or to legislation and have it embodied. One of the primary things I feel as an anti-discrimination and employment lawyer is that people have to meet people in order to realise how ordinary they are. And the place you meet people and realise how ordinary they are places in which you work with people. And that's the workplace. Secondly, what's really very important for people is that they are unable to obtain recognition of their relationships and consequently ensure financial protection for their significant others, their spouses, their lovers, their children. Because again, no amount of affording legal recognition is going to ensure that if they cannot legally frame that relationship that they have, that they can ensure that financial protection is provided for their spouse. As we all know in this room, probably about on rough figures, somewhere between 26 and 30% of the transgender and transsexual population identify as gay, lesbian, or bi. And obviously, there must be access. There must be access to medical provision, because in order for people to obtain legal protection in many parts of this world, despite what we might wish to aim for, there is actually a clear, vast majority of the world demands that people actually have undergone some form of gender reassignment surgery. And we must make sure that people can access hormones and surgery if they want to. But certainly hormones, effectively access them in order to be able to make the physical changes which might enable them to obtain better personal safety in public and in private. Now, what are the big difficulties if we're looking to seek any legal change? Well, I think we've already mentioned religious fundamentalist movements yesterday. But the fact is that when we were taking forward the gender recognition bill in the UK, that the Evangelical Alliance and the Christian Institute spent a total of $250,000 on publicity and materials to oppose that act. Now, as somebody who had about $2,500, well, we won. Which just shows the moral value of the argument. But they spent $250,000. So we've got to really remember, many of our key cases, for example, the Cantoras case in the US, which concerned the right of a trans man to raise his children, the appeal was funded by a Christian movement group. So we have to remember this. Our biggest enemies actually come from people who supposedly care. We also have as another enemy invisible transsexual people, as I term them. Right? They're out there. They take part, they gain access to services, we help them, and then they vanish. And I need you to sign petitions, and I need you to go and visit your Member of Parliament, and I need you to go and talk to your church group. The invisible transsexual people are people we need to bring back into our fold, and to remember that they have a community, even though they are. And I was going to say they have a community, even though they are now men and women. They have communities here. And the other big difficulty that we face, and we hear it constantly, and we've heard it particularly yesterday and this morning, is the problem we have of poor policing. And I put it poor policing, I could put terrible policing of trans people, and public services. Even though people are entitled to public services, those public services are given in such a way that people end up not getting them in the end. I was speaking to a colleague the other day who was applying for a job. She's actually on the front row here. And she is an experienced IT engineer. And in the job centre, the woman insisted on asking whether the problem was that she couldn't get a job now, was that in fact she may be a man, really. You know, and you just can't believe it after all these years that these things happen. Only the other day, somebody advised me that I might prefer a transfer to a women's unit because I'd get quicker treatment there. I don't think the rest of the women would like me. But this requires a three-pronged attack. It has to be an attack done by the whole of the transgender, transsexual and travesty movement worldwide. We have to present ourselves to the media, and we have to tell our stories as reasoned and coherent and sensible people. We have to fight for case law, we have to fight and take our cases to court, and we have to constantly lobby for legislation. In terms of transphobia, I'm going to quickly run through now the problems that we face. We have limits of protection, and this results as a consequence of discrimination which pervades the public service protection. The public service sectors, particularly in terms of welfare benefits, policing, medical provision most noticeably, we're always somewhere at the bottom of the list when it comes to financing any medical provision. Education. We just had LGBT History Month in the UK. My kids knew it was Black History Month in their schools, but they did not know it was LGBT History Month as well. And in particular, we think about service provision in prisons, where some of my most problematic work lies. Private sector services, we can change considerably if we have money. The pink pound. The problem is most of us don't have it. Right, so what is transphobia? It's a prejudice arising from the negative valuing and stereotyping resulting in discriminatory behaviour. It's defined by a fear, a hatred, a disgust of transgender, transsexual and other people because of their supposed non-conforming gender presentation and or status. Transphobia can be detected by its effects. It can be intentional or it can be unintentional. And it can be indirect or direct. This is the language of the courtroom. Any activity that sets out to harm or which results from ignorance or inadvertence is direct. Transphobia can be seen and present in hostile acts or in apparently neutral arrangements. I wanted to give you three examples. This was somebody recently, have a look, 1 minute, right. A sexual health clinic referring a trans woman to a men's clinic, right? A failure to refer in the university policy to trans people in the anti-bullying policy. No mention of the fact that 28 members of staff were transgender in this huge university, but they managed to exclude it from their anti-bullying policy, despite the fact that they'd been asked to put it in. And for example, a simple one, facial hair removal not covered in health policies for anybody with XY chromosomes. Anybody who's got polycystic ovaries and XX chromosomes can have facial hair removal. I did want to talk about the British policeman, of course, who actually couldn't get a helmet small enough for him, a trans man. And so consequently, the indirect transphobia there was the fact that he was completely visible because he had to wear a different helmet from every other policeman in the force. Anyway, transphobic incidents. Any incident which is perceived to be transphobic by the victim or another person. An incident that is directed to impact upon those known or perceived to be transgender, transsexual and other gender non-conforming people. Transphobia results in transphobic actions which are discriminatory, insulting, harassing or violent. At worst, it leads to the death of transsexual, transgender or other people. Victims, and I think it's really important to point out, there are trans-identified, transgender, transsexual people, gender non-conformist people, lesbians, gay men and bisexuals. Most street-based homophobic violence is in fact transphobic. I have never heard of a case there. I've taken the case notes where anybody has said, he stopped me and he asked me who I slept with. It's actually based entirely upon how you present your gender. So I think there's a real need to actually reconsider how we record violence. So just to culminate, Tyra Hunter died, Washington DC. She received inadequate care from paramedics at the scene of an accident because she was, as they termed it, a she, he, it. Christine Chappell died March 2nd, 2000. She was weighted down with a length of chain, 32.5 kilogram circular weights and two padlocks before being thrown into a local river. Robert Eads. He died of cervical cancer because nobody would treat it until it was just too late, because nobody wanted to deal with a trans man and his body. And of course, the recent one of Shisberta, who was tortured and sexually abused over 3 days, as Ava mentioned earlier this morning. That was only 1 month ago. And of course, there are those yet to come. I put the age 6 underneath it. But I thought, well, should I mean 4 or should I mean 3? Because when I watch my children grow their genders, they grew them somewhere between 3 and 4. I wonder how many parents find that difficult. In the European experience, we have gained some protection in employment, in privacy and relationship recognition, and we now have the new Equal Treatment Directive 113, which provides goods and services protection, and in fact does so, as we could now read the European Court of Justice decision from just before Christmas, from 2 years ago. So why aren't we going out there and claiming our rights? The UN needs a resolution prohibiting discrimination on the basis of gender identity and or gender presentation. I'm prepared to have any other form of words if it works. I want it to work. We need from the WHO, right, a statement that all regional and national governments have to do something about making available treatments.
Yes.
Right? And they have to be best practice treatments. Right? And they, first of all, as paramount, must respond to the patient's wishes and what the patient wants to do with their body, rather than the doctor dictating what will happen. And then, obviously, federal, national and regional needs. We need to seek to enact all of this. We need a unified effort. But that is only by transsexual people and transgender people and transvestite people and travesty and people of other different gender variances actually deciding to talk to each other and not to shout at each other. Thank you.